All right. I would say that we should be, if all goes well, and we should be connected now to Danny O'Connell, who is the national president of the Ancient Order of Hibernians. And if we are, how are you doing, Danny?
Well, I'm doing great. Happy to be here with you today.
Terrific. On a couple of issues. First of all, before we even get into the latest very serious matter the British government and their refusal to have a public inquiry on Pat Finucane, I want to ask you about yourself, about you were elected in July of this year as the new president of the Ancient Order of Hibernians, and it was a very different experience. Normally, you'd be carried shoulder high for the length and breadth of Ohio, but this was indeed a, like everything else in our lives, a very, very different swearing in and the entire event. Now, our mutual friend Dan Dennehy says it was better than the whole lot put together, but you couldn't believe the Lord's prayer. Couldn't believe the Lord's prayer from that fella. Now, so how did that election go, and in the absence of what would normally be a huge occasion?
Well, it went, we're always looking for the silver lining and what can we do better and what can we make it work. And it was a real challenge setting it up, and the success of our convention was greater than we could ever hope for. We ended up doing a Zoom webinar. We should have been in Orlando, Florida. Mm-hmm. And where we'd have had a dinner after the elections and so forth and our installation mass, we'd had a dinner with 900 people and music and dancing and so forth. Instead, we were at Youngstown State University in Ohio. We were in a classroom in the stadium that was a WebEx classroom doing a Zoom presentation. Judge McKay, our past president now, and Sean Pender and Jerry Cole came in. Danny Parks came in, one of our national officers, and a slew of brothers from Ohio to help out. And we had just a tremendous event. Our breakout sessions at a convention normally have anywhere from 5 to 50 people in them because we would split all up. We did those in advance. So all of the functions that we deal with, we had sessions with as many as 300 people in. I think our smallest session was 195. So more of us were able to learn more about what was going on. Then when we came to the actual general session, we had 560 plus delegates live with us throughout the day on Friday and Saturday. And I got to tell you, it was tremendous. And then the Diocese of Youngstown had hosted our installation mass, and they have a tremendous video broadcast system so many of these do. And so we were able to broadcast that around the country, and right from the altar of Cathedral in, I almost said theater because they did such a good job, the cathedral in Youngstown, we did our national installation. So we had three of the four officers there live. Father Keener stood in for Leah McNabb, our national treasurer. But then we brought Liam in over the internet and our six national directors in over the internet, and we installed everyone in at the same time. And it was just a great event. And it was I felt like I was in a television production.
Well, among other things, you've definitely earned, to be and for many, it is the ultimate, goal and honor to become the national president of the Indian Order of Hibernian. Can you bring us, though, a little bit of the history of the AOH? And it is the largest, and we'll take it from there.
Yes, we're the largest Irish organization outside of Ireland, but we are an Irish Catholic organization founded in 1836 in New York City in order to really protect our clergy. As with any immigrant group, when you first came to the United States, you were the lowest on the rung on the ladder.
Yep.
And you had to work yourself into society. And there wasn't a lot of Catholics around at that time. And so there was tremendous issues. And so I would say our foundation was about protecting the lives, really, of the clergy, as well as helping all the Irish immigrants coming in to the United States to assimilate, to at the same time keep in touch with our culture from back home. And we've developed into undoubtedly the most comprehensive Irish organization, Irish Catholic organization that there is. I mean, we cover everything from history and culture, which is so important and the glue that holds us all together, to working for a united and free Ireland. We do tremendous charities and missions work in our communities around the countries and back in Ireland. Our Catholic Action is constantly improving everything from an Irish language mass to we're going to have a Christmas mass from Ireland on Christmas Day online that we'll watch that will be included in with the local, with the Irish parish. Mm-hmm. Our pro-life work, we work with Veterans Affairs, helping the many veterans in the AOH find out what's out there to help them along. Our political education is tremendous. Neil Cosgrove from the Pearl River Division does a great job nationally with us.
Surely and does, of course, yeah.
Immigration is still critical. And in our Constitution, it says we're working for a fair and equitable immigration policy between the United States and Ireland. And so I like to tell people the Ancient Order of Hibernians is everything Irish, everything Catholic, and everything American. We have room for everybody. And I think that's why, and we welcome everybody. And I think that's why we have such a large organization.
Well, I tell you, that's a great synopsis there of the significance of the Ancient Order of Hibernians, known the world over. Ancient Order of Hibernians, USA. Now, you're hardly a stranger to Ireland. As I, as I was mentioning here, the best thing I heard about you so far is that your great-grandfather came to Mayo, and he is going to be absolutely delighted up there next week when Mayo wins the All-Ireland final. But he'd be brutal. You have made more trips to Ireland than so many immigrants, so many even of ourselves that were back and forth to Ireland. But you have actually, can you bring us to like one of the first times you were in Ireland and...
I will never forget the first time I was in Ireland. I was with my mother and father, and they had been in a bad car accident, and they were in their 50s and upper 50s, and it was like they got old overnight. And I told them, I said, we're going to Ireland. And I had played rugby in Wales. It was my first trip to Europe in the early 90s. And I came home from that. I told my parents, we're going to Ireland next year. Oh, we can't do that. And I got to tell you, my sisters felt they went to the fountain of youth because they realized what they could do. But the story I tell everybody is I landed on Good Friday. And, of course, in those days, which sometimes we long for the days gone by, all the pubs were closed on Good Friday. Yeah. You know, Good Friday and Christmas were the only day. So
well,
I landed
some,
in
some hell of a Cade Miller Fortra there. Yeah.
Yeah. And that first day, I was looking, you know, to have my first Ireland, and my parents thought it was so funny when we found out that they weren't going to open, and we stayed down in our first night. We stayed in a bed and breakfast just outside of Killarney, and there was a pub right across the street, and there was cars everywhere, and I just thought, well, I asked the landlady, and she said no. She said that the pubs are all closed. It's Good Friday. So the next day I said to her, I said, well, where'd all those cars go? And she said, what do you mean? I said, well, across the street, there were all those cars last night. She said they were at the pub. And I said, well, you told me it was closed. She said, oh, yeah, you had to go in the through the kitchen. I said, that'd be good. I said, that'd be good information last night. She said, oh, lad, you look so tired.
Yeah. Did you a favor, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll never
forget that because of that day. And of course, having my father with me and my mother, that was special, and I'll never forget that trip.
Now, over the years, and I'm only going by what you know, Danny Heat again. Told us, and by the way, Dan is the AOH New York State Immigration Chairman and doing one hell of a job. But 24, if not more, trips to Ireland over the years, was that a solo run, or did you go with your family? Was there, you know, was some of it business? Was it pure vacation? What was it?
It was a combination. I mean, some of it was AOH business while I was there, but I've always had social business to it. I used to coach college football, and I could never travel and go places like Ireland or be involved with even the AOH to the extent that I am when I was coaching college football. And so when I got out of that, and I played rugby, and my first trip to Europe, as I said, was rugby in Wales. Then I went to Ireland with my parents, and then the next year I played rugby in Ireland. And really, I think that's the trip that really made me want to go back. And when I first started going, whoever went with me, we'd rent a car. We'd have no reservations, and we would just find a place we liked, and we would stay. They used to joke, though, Adrian. They said nobody would ever go back with me because it's like every time I went with different people. And but I do have now one great friend, a member of our Hibernian Charities Board, Ed Moss, who has gone back six or seven times. Ed's gone back with me. And so I said everyone else either wised up after one trip with me or I'm not sure. But and I've been there a couple times with Dan Dennehy in the AOH when we used to take the tours over for the Bloody Sunday Peace March.
Friends, so. we are listening, indeed, on this live call here, to Danny O'Connell. You know, there are songs about your ancestors. I mean, the Danny O'Connell songs. I don't think we'll take the time to play one today, but you never know. We might slip it in. But, Danny, you are an official at Youngstown State University. Your interest, take Ohio. Obviously, Ohio was a hot spot and a very significant. We heard and saw more of Ohio in the recent campaign, which we won't go into either. But tell us, if you will, about the Irish in Ohio. Are they a clique? Are they, are they easily identifiable? Where are the Irish in Ohio?
Well, you know, we're really scattered all over the state. If you get up into the Cleveland area, you'll like this. We have a tremendous amount of people from Mayo in the Cleveland area.
Yeah.
They have one of the largest Mayo societies in their Mayo ball a few years ago when Edna Kenny was Prime Minister, Taoiseach.
Yeah.
He came up to the ball in Cleveland. And it shows you how large, I mean, him being from Mayo, that's why he came over. Youngstown, in the old days, we had dozens of AOHs in Youngstown long before me. And there was a neighborhood referred to as Kilkenny. And so the St. Patrick's Day Parade always has a one of the honorees beyond the Grand Marshal is the Lord Mayor of Kilkenny.
Wow.
Columbus, our capital, is the melting pot. You have a lot of the young Irish from all over the state that ended up in Columbus. And my nephew happens to be down there, and his division is probably one of the youngest divisions. It was the youngest in Ohio and probably one of the youngest divisions with longtime roots that we have in the country. They've been around for a long time. And now we've got this swell of young folks. And then in Cincinnati, we have another area, and I think a lot of that is because of where the Ohio River was.
Mm-hmm.
And as people came up, you know, they came in through the southern port and moved their way up the Mississippi, a lot of the people ended up in that area. And then over in Toledo, just north of us, is this state that they call Michigan. And we don't like to talk about it. Because we were supposed to play football against them today, and they didn't want to. But the southern part of Michigan, there's an area that they actually call the Irish Hills. And there's a great monument to the famine there, the great Ungoda Moore, the great hunger in the Irish Hills of Michigan. So that we're well represented, spread out. And like with anything, we're becoming more and more diluted because we don't have the immigration we would like to see today.
Right. Yeah, Danny, few newly elected presidents of the Ancient Order of Hibernians would indeed, by way of introduction to your new job, have had legitimate opportunities to express outrage, and that's the word, outrage, at the British government that after 31 years, and despite all of the commitments to have an open inquiry into the murder, you know, of civil rights lawyer Pat Finucan, that, you know, many would say boldly without giving a damn, the British government now says, okay, well, we won't bother with that one. You, as president of the Ancient Order of Hibernians, was that a shock to you, or was it more of the same?
Well, it's for anyone with a heart, and it's a shock that it happened. First and foremost, this wasn't just somebody assassinated. This was somebody who was brutally murdered in front of his three young children. John, the oldest, was only eight. Mm-hmm. His wife sitting next to him was shot. She survived. But while they were sitting at home, this was a civilian, someone whose only fault in the eyes of the British and the loyalists was that he was a civil rights attorney. And as you know better than I, the civil rights in the North of Ireland were very similar to our civil rights at the same time in the 60s. I mean, if you go into Derry, you're going to see a monument or a painting of a mural of Martin Luther King. I mean, it was peaceful protests and then the abuse that led to the violence. Well, and then you think about it, in 1989. Think about where you were in the United States in 1989. Could you imagine an attorney, a civilian attorney, sitting at home having a family meal, being shot 14 times right at the dinner table? We're not talking about in the 40s. We're talking about 1989. And the only thing I know about the British government, they knew exactly what happened because they have such a network of watching and showing. And the fact that the prime minister came out years later and admitted that there was horrendous collusion between the British Army and the loyalists that were involved, the intelligence and everything, and everything that set this up came from the British government. They've admitted that. And here we are in 2020, where we had a deadline for a public inquiry of the end of November, and they said, no, we're not going to do that. We're just going to see what the police ombudsman has to say. And the media went to him. He says, well, we don't have any active investigations going on. And it's the British are famous for a couple things, and one of them is delay, delay, delay. And I think they're going to it'll go away because people are aging out. Well, it's not. You know, Mrs. Finucane, the Finucane family, and every victim of every crime where collusion was involved deserves this hearing to go forward, because this is only the tip of the iceberg. And from our studies that Pat Finucane was a great solicitor, helping out many people, and I believe you knew a couple of those people, Paul O'Dwyer and Frank Birkin, who he was working with them in regard to their extradition and the deportation cases and so forth. And that was his sin, doing what he was trained to do, providing people their basic civil rights of representation, and then he was cold-blooded murder, and the British government has washed their hands of it, and their head is in the sand. And it's no different than anything else they did. You know, we witnessed it, the horror of what they've done. We witnessed it during Brexit. They signed international treaties, and but we're not going to follow that whole thing.
You had a very short window of time during which you spent it quite wisely in going to where the power is and where we always welcome and have the support of Congress. Now,
yes.
You must have done a couple of 24/7s to gather 24 members, because this was, I think that the shock of this horrific snub, and that's putting it mildly, you got 24 members, and indeed there are those who said if you held off or if you got started a week earlier, you could nearly double that. What was that? What was the reaction from Congress and for the people, and how did you identify those 24 so quickly?
Well, one of the things we have going for us is the spread of our organization. And I think I did not mention earlier, we have membership in every state of the union in Washington, D.C. Now, we don't have divisions in every state, but we have individuals that want to be a part of it. So we found out, we got the final draft of the letter actually on Sunday. And Chris Smith's office was helping us, and Richie Neal. They got us a draft of the sign-on. And even one of the congressmen said, usually we hear from the sponsor of the sign-on letter before we hear from our constituents. And we were actually in the on the phone and in the ear of offices before they were even able to distribute that out Monday morning. And we had a 3-day window because of the Thanksgiving holiday.
I am.
But we kind of remind Boris Johnson and company that the United States has is a very big player here. Although we're not a signatory, we were involved with the Good Friday Agreement. Part of that is getting these cases, you know, the justice cases heard, yeah. And on top of it. And you're going to be looking for the United States to help you out as you go through Brexit and you didn't make any plans on where you're going to get your food for dinner. And Congress isn't real happy that you're not following up on your commitments and you're not following international law and you're not even following your own Supreme Court. And again, it's to me what the Finucanes went through when the British said we're not going to have a free and public inquiry on this 30 plus years later was as brutal day for that family as it was when they brutally murdered their father. It's just so sad and heartbreaking. And even today, if it doesn't make you angry, you're not human. And that's why I can't understand why they can't simply honor their commitments, honor their court rulings. And how can we enter into any type of agreement with them, whether it's a trade deal or anything else, knowing that their agreement isn't as worth the paper it's printed on? When they're, you know, this last agreement with the backstop, it wasn't a year later and they were talking about walking away from it.
Yeah.
If they still aren't, why is everyone so skeptical? Well, if you lie to me once, shame on you. If you lie to me twice, shame on me. And it's sad, Aiden. It's sad.
Let me say without, this might be bordering on paranoia, but we can't help, you know, with looking at the history of Ireland's relationship with, you know, Britain. Was there the rollout of this refusal? Might that have been timed, you know, to say, hey, most people are much more worried about Brexit, and this might be a good time to shove this one out so it'll be under the carpet, you know, when Brexit occurs?
Well, the timing of the decision was put out by their own Supreme Court. So it had to happen then.
Mm.
But when they were making the decision, calculating, I think, how to proceed, they probably thought there was enough cover with Brexit that maybe it wouldn't be the issue it is. But I know you've had John Finucane on your show.
And Geraldine through the years.
Yeah, and Geraldine as well. But we actually had a call with John Finucane the week before Thanksgiving. And I think that his words, and you know, he's such a tremendous speaker, and he's an MP, and it really incited our group, and the outrage is there, and it's not just us. It's the Brehons, it's the Irish American Unity Conference, it's obviously the Congress, who has had both Geraldine and John testify numerous times on numerous committees over the years.
Yeah, 10 times.
How do you believe? If somebody, and it's not like they don't know who did it, and it's not like they don't have the information about the collusion, or when Cameron was prime minister, he wanted to apologize.
Right.
How can this be okay in our society?
Now, Mr. President Danny O'Connell, National President of the Ancient Order of Bernians, my guest, so that this doesn't get lost in the shuffle, you're instigating and then rapidly getting support as might be expected. You were actually, in Mayo we would say, tackling the UK ambassador. So it's not like, you know, this was a press statement that was sent out to, you know, your membership. Again, there's no way that message could get lost in the mail.
Well, yes, and the ambassador, we believe, is obligated to respond and to pass that forward. And so, yes, and that was actually, you know, we have such a great group of officers nationally,
yeah.
And we work with each other so closely. And Neil Cosgrove came up with the idea, and he said, you know, we need to do more than a press release. Mm. And we kicked it around, and he said, you know, we need to get a hold of Ambassador Pierce and ask her what is going on. And so beyond our statement of outrage, and, you know, and it's hard because the disbelief, you know, people, when I talk to people, I think you said, you know, without being paranoid, there are people today that have a hard time believing me when they tell them the story,
yeah,
of what happened in 1989 and the shocking levels of collusion. And so we called directly to the ambassador. We let her know, you know, our America's indignation at the decision not to pursue this inquiry. It was a slam dunk for him to do it.
Yeah,
and it's going to be like anything else, you know. The go back to Bloody Sunday when they finally admitted that they were wrong, but we're not going to do anything to those guys who did. And we've had countries all over the world have had military people do things incorrectly, and in the United States they get held to a standard.
That's true.
And I would like to believe that if that happened in the United States, they would have been brought to justice already. And it's like they're just waiting for people to die off before they admit to what they did. And Prime Minister Cameron said it was shocking levels of collusion.
Yeah.
But let's look into it.
I think, though, that if we are to look for a reason for yet another delay, I think you kind of should underline what you just said there is, you know, the longer this is dragged on, you know, we're talking about 31 years ago.
Oh, it's insane.
You know, drag it on for a bit. Some of the you know, are dead and gone, and others are, elderly, and if they play their cards or continue to play that game, yeah, they'll do all right in a few, very few short years, and then it won't be an issue anymore.
Yeah, and it's tragic. Mm. Absolutely tragic.
I thank you so much for spending the time with us, and also, not that we don't have enough grief as it is on, you know, on both sides of the Atlantic, but it is very important not just to have a news item, but to have the largest, strongest organization of Irish Americans in the United States take the bull by the horns, get this off, and you know, you've hardly had time to take your jacket and your waistcoat off there, but congratulations on doing it, and it's not going to go away. this is not going to go away, and it's not going to be shoved into, you know, into the abyss, into a bog hole. This has to be resolved and quickly. And thank you, and thank the officers, and you know, those in the ancient order of Hibernians who, you know, took this up at this particular time. You know, and in fact, not only is it timely, but again, as I say, we can't help. Some of us can't help, but you know,
you're absolutely right, I want to thank you for having me on today, because it might be a different person sitting in this chair down the road, and it is going to be just like Judge McKay was here doing the same thing
right.
A year ago. But the Ancient Order of Hibernian is not going to go away, and we're going to call on the members of our Congress time and time again to hold their feet to the fire of the British government, and saying that they're ignoring their responsibilities, their commitments under international treaties, and in this case, a Good Friday Agreement, where they have a responsibility to the families of the victims of the Troubles, and they've signed off on that 20 yeah. plus years ago, and they got no problem just kicking it down the can, and it's just not fair to these people who went through such an unbelievable tragedy.
Danny O'Connell, the National President of the Ancient Order of Hibernians, to you, to yours, and to those who indeed have for generations used and taken the strength and the membership of the Ancient Order of Hibernians to watch out for Ireland and to keep the tradition of, yes, of the Irish as indeed when the AOH, their mission statement is still in order. Thank you very much, Jenny.
Thank you.